Welcome to Glassbreakers Cafe, the podcast where we meet with impactful leaders to get their wisdom and insight on the future, leadership, and career development. Our goal is to inspire you and empower you to live an unlimited and smart future by breaking free from limiting beliefs, firefighting, and the invisible walls of our society. I'm your host, Cindy Mongeni, future work expert, diversity accelerator, executive coach, and international speaker. Welcome to Glassbreakers Cafe, a space when we get personal with an impactful leader to get his or her views on inclusive leadership, the future of work, and career development. Today, our special guest is Marcus Cooper, the head of Global Diversity, Equity, Inclusion at Zendesk. Welcome, Marcus, and thanks a lot for spending this time with us.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
And I would like to start to understand, what is your role and responsibility as the head of Global Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion?
Oh gosh, what a fun question. It sometimes feels like it changes every day. You know, I think at a high level, my job is really to sort of align our enterprise level business strategy with our inclusion strategy. And we do that to sort of help drive engagement and just really strong global outcomes, right? We want to make progress in this work, which has been pretty stagnant across the software industry. And so I'd say like many of our peers, particularly in tech and in SaaS, I think one of our key objectives is really to embrace diverse digital first teamwork. And, you know, that means that we do a couple of things. It means that we create a culture where our employees feel fully included and have an equitable experience. And it also means, and I think this part is even more important, but it means that we embed DE&I deeply across the employee journey, right? And that we develop leadership accountability around this work. And I do think that that piece is where the majority of my team's work lives. It's that integration piece that makes the work most effective, you know, so that, you know, global diversity, equity, inclusion is less of a push strategy where we sort of push out critical efforts to the business, but more of a pull, right? Where we create an environment where it's part of our DNA, of our culture. It doesn't feel like an add-on or a separate initiative, but really just this red thread that underpins how we lead, how we grow, and how we nurture talent.
Yeah, and I love it because I think like this is part of the big awakening, I hope, like since last year, when everybody realized that it's not only being like having a diverse, inclusive with opportunities for all, it's not only socially and morally important, but is economically important. Yes. Because at the end, this is who we are and as a society. Mm-hmm. So, and I love how you're starting really planting this. This is part of business. This is really part of who we should be. And for you, because this is not your first role in the diversity space, what is the most rewarding aspect of your role?
Oh gosh, this is tough because there are so many pieces that I think speak to my mind and heart with this work. But, you know, when we sort of examine or think about the fear and anger and just sort of pure chaos in the world today, I think it's easy to feel a little bit helpless, right? Dante Wright was just killed. And while, you know, we're all sort of watching the trial surrounding the murder of George Floyd, then this week we're confronted with the murder of Adam Toledo, who was only 13 years old. It's awful. And not to mention the violence against the AAPI community, you know, particularly surrounding the global pandemic we've been surviving over the last year or so. It's a lot. And so I see corporate DE&I work as a tool for restorative justice, right? It's, you know, on my worst days, I really try to ground myself in that. And I do feel a little bit less helpless when I do so. You know, this, I think my role is a selfless one. I consider myself a servant leader. And it is just so rewarding to be able to do my part in making the world a bit more just and equitable.
Yes, and I love it because this is really, for this reason, at this moment, those roles in each organization are so critical because you have like a direct impact really on people's life and the company performance. Like it's really, you could feel like those roles are really like mission driven. And I love it. But even if you're young, Marcus, is not your first role in the diversity, equity and inclusion space. And also, even if at this moment, I believe there is like really a lot of optimism that we're going to move the needle, because we've been talking for years, for decades about diversity, equity, and inclusion, because once again, this should be normal, right? Because this is who we are as a society. Yeah. So what do you see as those challenges that are making so difficult to execute on a vision that is so clear and that makes sense, where to have a society organization where everybody has an opportunity? So what are like those challenges in the day-to-day that you are facing?
Gosh, I love this question. And it's funny because you're right. I mean, this work has been around for at least 50 years. Right? I mean, you look at industries like banking and real estate, which really were the pioneers of this type of work, and then consulting came into play and many others, but they started this journey a long time ago. And it, you know, we sort of scratch our heads and look around and think, well, why aren't we further along in the process? And I think that, you know, and I'll just speak from you know, most of the leaders I've worked with in the past are learning about DE&I for the very first time. And in an environment where they're being held accountable for outcomes, right? It's no longer just the nice thing to talk about. Now there's an expectation that we'll move. And, you know, I try to put myself in those shoes, right? I'm non-technical, and I sort of imagine, you know, what if I was asked today to lead a global engineering team? I would be terrified. I lack the skills and, you know, I lack some of the awareness to really fully step into a role like that. And we're seeing some of that sort of trepidation play out in corporate leadership environments. So I think it requires a lot of learning. It requires a ton of grace and patience. And it really does require a strong ability to influence. I think today, you know, I'm really grateful to work with a group of leaders who I like to say are just refreshingly human, generally speaking, just completely bought into this work. And it doesn't feel like we're sort of herding cats. And, you know, I think we have an opportunity to really start to take this to the next level through our enablement of leadership and really starting to surface the stories of the underrepresented talent that we have in our organization. Because I do think, you know, proximity to cultures, awareness is what starts to drive some of that change. But, you know, we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. And I think like one of the parts that we're mentioning is leadership. Yeah. Because there is a quote from John Maxwell, like everything rises and falls on leadership. So I love the part of really having like a leadership that is committed and accountable. So there is like the learning part, but there is also the commitment and the accountability. Yeah. When we look at your career, you have a quite mobile career, and which is more or less like the new paradigm for career. I'm Generation X. So Generation X or baby boomer, generally you could find a lot of people building a career within a corporation. But now, because everything is changing and diversity is so key, because diversity is also diversity of thoughts and diversity of experience. So nowadays, your career path is more common.
Yeah.
What are like the key elements that are driving your career choices?
Oh, well, I would say at a high level, there's really one key thing that I look for, and then that has a couple of smaller inputs. But what I can say is right now my focus is impact. You know, mm-hmm. where can my skills be best utilized to really help drive meaningful change for people, for products, even for customers, right? But I think what's become increasingly important is that, you know, myself and folks like me really start to test for org readiness on the front end.
Okay.
You know, much of the DEI landscape has become a little bit buzzworthy. You know, everyone is starting to talk the language. Everyone's issuing their sort of branded, you know, DE&I statements or what have you. And generally speaking, some organizations have gotten really good at sort of faking the orientation to DE&I because they recognize that, you know, the next generation of talent depends on it. They recognize that there are stakeholders, their investors, their customers care about it, but they don't quite know what to do with it, right? So I think I've had to be a bit more intentional about assessing for where a company is on their journey and whether or not they're really ready to bring in a leader to help accelerate that work, because it's not easy and it does require a commitment that can't be shaken by slow progress or missteps or what have you.
Mm. Great. Impact, super important. And impact, this is like so important because we see like almost everybody really want to have like this impact, to have like a work that is meaningful. But what is interesting with you, not only you are able to change organization, but also to change industry.
Yeah.
And a lot of professionals sometimes want to change industry and once again, like to learn, to grow, to have more impact, but it's challenging.
Yeah.
So what is your secret, your strategy to transition from one industry to another one?
You know what? There's no formula to this at all. It's funny because I started in healthcare. I started at Oscar Health, which is sort of an Obamacare era health insurance company. And really what makes Oscar so exceptional is how we deliver care. And we utilize a mobile app, which was really at that time sort of new when you think of the world of telemedicine. And so I had found myself in an organization that was both healthcare and technology. And I think the technology piece is what has given me the most mobility in terms of being able to transition into new roles within different organizations. And I think that's why I'm so committed to tech. You know, it's one of the wealthiest and most influential industries in the world. So, yeah. And so I think, you know, really I'm investing my time here because I think I have the opportunity to create change at scale, you know, and if I ever decide to pivot, I think that much of what I do here is quite transferable. And so I would just have to look at, you know, of course, that readiness model, impact potential, and really whether, you know, both parties feel like it would be a fit. But yeah, there's no real method to it. I've sort of gone where the work leads me. And I'm very fortunate to have leaders who have really subscribed to this work and have really, you know, sponsored my growth and my development. So that's also been huge for me.
Yeah, this is what I was going to ask you. Maybe it's also like the network that you have around you, the sponsor, yeah. The mentoring, the people who are like willing to open those doors for you.
Yes. Yeah, there is nothing on earth that can replace mentorship or sponsorship. It's part feeling seen and validated, but also feeling like someone has invested in you, that they see in you your potential, you know? And I think that's really special, particularly for underrepresented groups who sometimes, like myself, struggle with imposter syndrome or really looking to get into spaces that we don't directly have access to. You know, one small example, I currently report to our Chief People and Diversity Officer, Ina Marie Johnson. And Ina Marie is an exceptional leader. She knows this space really, really well. One of the things that I appreciate most about her is her investment in my career. You know, I mentioned earlier, I joined Zendesk, and the minute I joined, it was immediate change, right? And I've sort of stepped up into this role in a big way that I think none of us had really planned for or anticipated. And Ina Marie has been great in terms of coaching me as we go into our leadership discussions. She's been great at giving me the platform to have dialogue with our most senior executives. She's been great at sort of checking in, making sure I feel supported, engaged. She's given me access to spaces that a lot of folks don't get access to. And I'm so grateful for that. And I think when I get to experience that, it sort of underscores the importance for me to turn around and do that for others. Mm. Be that person that helps open doors for folks who are still rising, you know, in their career, or perhaps in the DE&I space.
And this is so critical, what you were mentioning. I'm not a diversity and inclusion expert, but my role as a future of work expert, one of my pillars is to close the diversity leadership gap. Because there is already some companies who are like intentional in hiring diverse people. But when you look at leadership, you still have a huge gap for minorities. And one of the things that I always encourage is, remember, when you hire, you need to mentor and you need also to sponsor those people. It's not just about the hiring process is critical, but really also the development of the talent is critical. So I love that you are able like to experience it, and this we can see it in the great careers that you are building. You are young, Marcus, because you're millennial, but as you were mentioning, the world is changing like super, super, super fast.
Yeah.
So your job is changing almost like every day, but what do you do personally to stay relevant in the marketplace?
I think I have really become an expert listener. I know that sounds really simple. You know, my grandfather taught me that every human has something to teach you, and so does every situation. And so I really lean into, you know, the voice of my team, of the employees. I lean into what we're seeing in the world and really try to bring the outside in terms of my work, right? I think, you know, our behaviors, our language, all of those things communicate something. And for me, being a lifelong learner is what keeps my work relevant and fresh. And I've got an incredible team that sort of keeps my bubble clear when there are things that I don't see. But that is a skill, being a really good listener. And you know, in moments where I don't get that sort of live dialogue because life is hectic and my calendar is just all blue and full, there are some really consumable resources out there that I like to read. You know, I'll say HR Drive has really good DE&I content. Gartner, of course, sends incredible sort of research studies, and I learn a lot from some of that. But you know, just tuning into the world is the best way to learn. And actually, that's kind of a message that I'm sharing with our leaders, which is tune into what's happening around you. I think there's space for formal development programs and workshops and trainings and all that stuff, but nothing will teach you what your environment can teach you.
Yeah, but training is still important, Marcus.
Of course.
As a leadership trainer.
Got to hit it in all
my shameless plug. No, but I totally agree with you. And this is what I was going to also to mention. You mentioned that you've been blessed to have mentors and sponsors in your life. And now also you also are mentoring. Mm-hmm. So I was about to ask you, who are you mentoring? And also in this mentoring process, I imagine that you are learning, because also now we could see there is reverse mentoring. It's not just the older teaching the new, but the new generation teaching the older generation. So I believe also part of your mentoring roles is part of staying relevant, right?
Yes. I have a couple of mentees whom I won't call out, but what I can say about them is I intentionally engage with folks from different industries, different points in their careers, different backgrounds, identities, experiences, because I want that two-way learning. I want that two-way mentorship. And I'll be honest with you, sometimes I think to myself, man, I must be getting more out of this relationship than they are because I'm asking questions. And one thing I can say about the rising generation of talent is that they are incredibly cause-oriented. They care very deeply for the humans they work with every day. They care deeply about the quality of life and the role of the private sector to contribute to that, as well as, of course, you know, the global social justice movement and legislation. Mm-hmm. And there's so much in that that's a little bit counter to how a lot of executives have been traditionally trained. You know, I think historically folks have been trained to sort of shut the outside world out, and there's no room for corporate advocacy or politics or what have you. But you know what I'm learning is that it's non-negotiable. This generation requires a bit of a consciousness for any organization that they join. And I love it. I absolutely love it. It makes the conversations really fresh when I engage with executives and I talk to them about what we should be planning for and preparing for. It makes it fun again. And I think really that's what we need, right? We need to be able to experiment, try new things, evolve our thinking, evolve our cultures to reflect the world outside. And I feel pretty lucky to be part of that.
Yeah, great. And we're going to come to an end of our time together, Marcus, but I like to end those conversations with a kind of light notes and going a bit like of to the dream space. Okay. So if you have the opportunity to have lunch with three famous persons who are alive today, which ones would you pick and why?
I got to start with Michelle Obama. Just the coolest person on earth and gosh, brilliant. I come from a family of really strong women who have taught me so much. So I'm itching to get my hands on Michelle Obama a little bit. Who else? I'd say Charles Blow. He is the author of a book that I'm reading called The Devil You Know, a Black Power Manifesto. And gosh, this guy is just brilliant in terms of really telling the story of the Black American experience. And sort of the essence of the book is all about how Black Americans who now live in destination cities, which is what they use to describe the cities where most folks migrated to away from the South many years ago. There's sort of a call for folks in destination cities to return to the South as a means to regain political power. And it's just a brilliant thesis. And I haven't finished it. I've been really enjoying the read. So would love to have coffee with Charles and learn more about, you know, his experiences and all the great folks he's got to interview. And I would say lastly, Stacey Abrams. Just such an icon, you know. What was the number? I think she registered like 800,000 new voters in Georgia. Unreal. Completely transformed the 2020 election. I feel good about those three.
Good. This is going to be an interesting lunch. And I hope like this comes from dream to reality.
Me too. If you see this, you know where to find me.
We are going to tag them when we are going to launch the interview. So thank you very much, Marcus, for your time together. I'm super thankful for all those gems that you've been dropping to the interview. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been fun. Let's do it again.
Yes, sure. And for our audience, I hope like you enjoy it as Marcus and I did it. And see you next week for another encounter at Glass Breakers Cafe. If you enjoyed today's episode of Glass Breakers Cafe, please subscribe and share with your friends on social media. Also, be sure to follow me, your host, Cindy Mongeny, on LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. If there is any special guest or special topic you would like us to address, please drop me a note at cindy@newskiesnation.com. Thanks a lot for joining us today. And remember, no one can predict the future, but we still need to prepare for it. See you next week.